Autre radio, autre culture, bonjour. Cette semaine, Autre radio, autre culture et Audio People sont allés au-devant des rencontres de la création sonore 2009 qui se sont déroulées à la SAE, School of Audio Engineering. Voici la première partie de notre sujet, production et post-production en son multicanal. Michael Niemann, musicien, producteur, diplômé Tonmeister de la Royal Danish Academy of Music, nous donne son point de vue sur la captation en multicanal, abordant les aspects techniques et artistiques pour la prise de son en musique classique et de variété.
This presentation will be in English. I'll do my best to speak slow and clear English. I do believe that you appreciate that more than my French or maybe my Danish. So let's see if we can make each other understandable. I'm here to do a short presentation on different surround microphone techniques. I'll do a short half an hour talk about different ways to do it, different tips and ideas. And then we'll move down the aisle to one of the studios where Giselle is saying that we can only be about six persons at a time. So we will do some swapping there.
Pour synthétiser ce qu'a dit Michael, on va avoir un petit problème de gestion. On a la présentation théorique qui ne pouvait pas être dans une petite salle et on a la présentation pratique qui ne peut pas être ici. Par contre, il y a également la FSI qui continue, qui va faire sa conférence sur la production en multicanal qui vous intéresse aussi. Donc le petit chassé-croisé qui va se passer après la présentation théorique de Michael, ça va être de passer par groupe de 6 dans la salle Icon, où là, l'arbre sera déployé et qu'on fera de la captation en multicanal, en vous demandant de revenir ici pour poursuivre les conférences de la FSI qui sont également sur le multicanal. OK, merci.
So that was the plan. Now you know what to do. I do understand some of it. All right. So why should we make surround sound productions at all? In my mind, one of the big differences we can make in a surround sound production is that we can make the audio experience more intense. We can give ourselves a better tool to communicate with the listener. And what I usually divide the productions into is to distinguish between this acoustic surround capture. And that means that we need to know something about how to capture an acoustical field with the appropriate surround technique. And what we do is that we want to increase the feeling of a certain atmosphere, a certain acoustic environment, to make that even more correct in the surround reproduction. Then we can also make what we can call a produced surround sound, meaning that we have sometimes quite a few number of mono channels that we pan around, like we pan in stereo between left and right. Modern equipment gives us the possibility to pan that sound source around in 5.1. also, but that has not that much got to do with the surround techniques. So that is one of the things that I usually distinguish between: is it acoustical surround that we want, or is it produced surround? And sometimes we can even blend those two together. Let's say a pop concert, a rock concert, with a lot of spot mics on stage that we pan around in the surround field, and then we also have what we could call an surround ambience array somewhere out in the audience to make it more like the sensation that we are there. So let's say that we have here a certain sound source in a certain room. Of course, that sound source gives a number of reflections round in the room, quite a few. And basically, you could say, when played back in stereo, this sound source is, of course, located here between left and right speaker. But then the challenge is there that what do we do with the reflections? The reflections in a stereo playback are also played back between left and right speaker. And that gives us a sort of a collapse, you could say, of where the original directions were. When we have a 5.1 system, and I guess that you are familiar with this ITU standard, which is standard 60 degrees left-right, a center in between, left and right surround at 120 degrees from center, then we have the possibility to place the reflections at the correct place where they originally came from. So instead of having the reflections actually played back in front of us, we are able in surround to play them back into the rear where they originally came from. So that gives us the strong working tool. What do we then do with surround mics? To learn and understand surround, it's important that you also know something about stereo to start with, because there are some similarities and some differences. A way to distinguish can be, like in stereo, to say that we have coincident arrays and we have spaced arrays. Coincident arrays are stereo, for example, XY, MS, techniques where you have the capsules in nearly the same place with no time arrival differences between them. Spaced arrays, on the other hand, is where the microphones are spaced in a certain distance to create some time arrival differences that we can localize from. So in general, you could say that what the coincident techniques are good for is that they can create quite a good localization accuracy all around the field, but they have a tendency to create quite a small sweet spot. You all know in a stereo system, you can hear a phantom center image when you are in a certain location between left and right speaker. So imagine that we now do the same for a surround system with five coincident microphones, then you also have the risk that you also should become sweet spot in two dimensions to make the right sensation. On the other hand, what spaced arrays can do is that they will give, you could say, a sweet area instead of a sweet spot. Bigger area that you can feel a certain size in the sound. It's almost like even if you're outside the 5.1 speaker circle, you can actually feel that three-dimensional size of the sound. And in my opinion, that's what gives us the strongest tool when talking surround, because it should be something else than stereo, because otherwise there's no real reason for doing it. So it should give us that sensation of space and depth and three-dimensionality. And it's done the best way by spacing the microphone. So just to give you a brief introduction to products that we have made at DPA Microphones, I'll show you in these four categories what we're up to. We have some mounting tools that are actually universal. So it's not a specific DPA microphone mounting system, but it's an all-round system that you can combine in a number of ways. You know, in Denmark, we all grew up with these toys named Lego, small blocks that you can put together. So whenever we do products, we love to put things together in a number of different combinations. So that's actually the idea of this one as well. And we have different lengths of arms here to make it quite big. And it can either be in a two-channel or three-channel configuration, or it can even be combined up to five microphones. Here are some examples showing what we call the Decatree array. The traditional old-school Decatree setup was defined by having 2 meters distance between left and right channel, and then the center channel 1 meter on top of that line. So even though at that time the Decca record company developed that system, they did not have a specific center channel. They even used this largely spaced microphone arrays to have this sensation of size. So the center microphone was simply blended in equally between left and right. And that's a big advantage to be able to even produce with some backwards compatibility. You can have this Decatree as a front array and be able to put it left, center, right. Or when doing the stereo mix, you can put it left, right, and the center microphone, just pan that one in the middle. Some producers, more modern type, you could say, prefer to have the microphones more online to each other, not having the center microphone that much in front of the left-right bass line. So that's also possible with the Lego system. Excuse me, the DPA system. In some applications, it might also be appropriate to have equilateral setup, meaning that we have the same distance between all three microphones like that one. It also has the possibility that, or the advantage that the system is in perfect balance. It's very easy to fly such a system over a symphonic orchestra, for instance. So then we can expand that Decca tree front with a rear arm and a rear center disc and put on two microphone arms more. And we can arrange quite a number of arrays. And here I just mentioned a few well-known, accepted standards. I'm not allowed to say, but well-accepted methods of putting up the microphones. Both Japanese, actually, Fukada and Hamasaki defined these arrays. And you can see here, left, right, and left, right surround, 2 meters between those, and the center microphone, 1 meter in front of that. That's the classic Decca tree. And then the rear microphones go on to that. And Hamasaki square is another way to do it, also in a square, 2 by 2 meters, with figure of eight microphones. So that array can be arranged in, well, close to endless combinations at your taste. So I suggest that we go into that in the room later on if time allows us. One system that I like a lot is a system called wide cardioid surround array with five identical microphones, special type that we make that is called wide cardioid. It's actually you could say a combination somewhere in between an omni microphone and a cardioid microphone. It has a little less directionality than a regular cardioid, but is more directional than an omni. So it creates some directionality to the rear, so you're able to point the microphones to obtain a little more clarity. It's a very good array, and it's easily set up with that system. I actually brought with me a DVD. I don't know if we can play that back. That's Danish music, but the sound is pretty good. And that one is produced with such an array over the mixing console by the audience place. So it gives us a very, very good sensation of being there in that concert hall. So let's see if we can play just a little bit of that later on. You can also use this so-called portable array, but it's not that portable compared to what I'm going to present in a little while. Of course, we also produce microphones because that's the business that we're in. So we produce microphones to be able to put in this surround mount system. And we have, at the time, three different kits of combinations of microphones. We have one kit containing five omni microphones, five identical omnis. One kit with three identical omni microphones intended to be used in a Decca tree in the front, and then with a matched pair of cardioids for the rear, because that's also a way to do it, that you, instead of having five identical microphones, want to, for example, have a little more attenuation for the rear channels, so that the direct sound from an orchestra, for instance, will not come out too loud in the rear speakers. That's one of the risks of using five omnis, is that the direct sound will be too prominent in the rear. And then you get a little confused about where is the orchestra actually. So it might also be a good combination. And then the third kit is that kit containing the five matched wide cardioid mics. When we do these kits, we are quite concerned about making them identical. Last week I was in Munich for the AAS convention and was at a workshop. I was one of the panelists in a workshop discussing microphone specifications. What can we read from specifications about a microphone? What does it tell us? And you could say, even, of course, specifications will tell us something about a microphone, but it will never substitute listening to it. But what is so very important, and that was one of the conclusions from the workshop, is that when pairing microphones, when having two microphones or for stereo or five microphones for surround, it's very important that they are identical. Otherwise, you will hear the difference right away. It's not that much if the frequency response is perfect or flat. Well, in our situation, we do care about that, but it's more that the five frequency responses of the microphones are identical. Otherwise, you will hear the change right away. So what we do when we do the surround match is that we calibrate the microphones to be identical within a certain tolerance. So And we also prove that by a certain frequency response that is unique for that microphone kit. You can see that here. This is an example of a 406 Omni microphone, and this is the on-axis frequency response for that specific microphone. It has a very subtle, a very small lift here. It's about 1.5 dB in the higher frequencies. It has to do with some clarity lift that we want when we are at a distance. But then you can see also the matching curve for this microphone versus the mean of the set, meaning that we take the average frequency response of all five microphones, and then we show the difference in frequency response from this certain microphone to the mean of set. So this curve should be as flat as possible to show that they are equal. And that means that even though the microphone has an intended lift up here, that lift is the same for all five microphones. Otherwise, you will hear that change, that difference right away. So it's very important when you do surround, acoustic surround, that you know something about that your microphones are identical. One combination here that I can recommend is that with three Omni microphones in a decatree for the front, and then backwards faced cardioids. For example, in an RTF configuration, but not necessarily. The point is that we point the microphones away from the sound source. So the sound source will play into the attenuated entrance to the cardioid microphone. This is one of the configurations that we'll try later on. I actually don't know for sure what musicians will be there, a guitar player and a percussionist, I think. Yeah. So we can try different arrays and see how far away we have to, or we like to go. When I write 8 to 10 meters, of course, that's in a big concert hall, and probably not something that we can do in the studio here. Another good technique is with five Omnis, and I'd like to play you an example of that in a little while. It's mostly when you have a very good sounding concert hall or church or the like that five identical Omnis will give you that great sensation and true sound color that an Omni microphone has. The red spot here means that the rear microphones are mounted with a so-called acoustic modification accessory, a small acoustic pressure equalizer. That's a little ball-shaped device of plastic that you put on top of the microphone. Don't know if you're aware of such a thing. It looks a little funny, but it sounds really, really good. What it does is that it changes the on-axis frequency response. You can see that it now creates a quite wide bandwidth presence boost. And it also changes the polar pattern. It changes the directionality of the microphone. So instead of being more perfect Omni, it creates the shape of a supercardioid, you can see. It's not that much of an attenuation as a supercardioid, but it's that shape. And that means that even that we have Omni microphones for the rear channels, we can angle them such a way that the direct source will enter the microphone into these attenuated angles. So we still benefit from the true sound color and full frequency bandwidth that the Omni has. But we make it sort of directional, at least at certain frequencies, at certain angles. So that's what we can do with that acoustic pressure equalizer. And at the same time, this boost will only be on axis, and the more off axis you get into the microphone, the more linear it will become, and it will even roll off the higher frequencies from behind. So that's a very clever and useful tool to have. This was the white cardioid surround array that you already saw before. A good tip, a good practical tip, is try to investigate in angling the rear microphones. Sometimes there are very important information about height definition in a certain room that you can capture simply by angling those microphones in that direction. And also, if you are, if that array is, let's say it's behind the conductor and the rear mics are then 2 meters behind the conductor, then these microphones begin to come closer and closer to the audience, which might cause some noise and scratch. And so angling the rear mics upwards will be a very good idea in that situation. And that array can, of course, also be adapted by that mounting tool. So let's just have a short demo of of a surround recording, of an acoustic surround recording done with 5 Omni microphones. That's that array in there, that one. So it was a Decatree in the front, about 1 meter distance between the three mics. And then I had some 6 to 7 meters out to the rear Omnis and mounted the, that acoustic pressure equalizer on those mics. It's a recording I did a few years ago in Liverpool, in a big cathedral in Liverpool. This might not give the impression that it is that big, but it is. Maybe you can see there is a person standing there. So you get the sensation when you walk into that room that you are such a small little human being. And I did a test of the reverb time, and it was about 6 to 7 seconds. So it's quite a long, big room. And this is a boys choir of about 12, 14 boys and an organ. So let's try and have a listen to that. Loading. That's a good sign. Yeah. Did you feel the room? Maybe not that much in the front rows here because we are too close to the front speakers, but you in the red, I think you were in the cathedral. So this is a demo disc that we released a few years ago, and you can order it from our French distributor, Didier Pang, from Audio Deux, this gentleman, or you can also order it from our website. It's free. And the same recording here was also the two other arrays that I showed you before. So this was the recording with the 5 Omnis, and also you can hear it with the cardioid combination. Good. We also have this small mobile surround device that I will talk a few minutes about. I suggest that we also mount that one in the studio in a while. It's pretty new and is intended to be a plug and play device that you can easily go around with to make surround sound simple, you can say. Surround to go, some say. When we don't have the time to put up 6 microphone stands and do all the thinking about the distances and the angles and so on, but we just want to put on one device where a manufacturer has given it some thought about how does this one capture the surround. And I'll just go briefly through how this unit works, but can have this one go around to feel how light it is. And it is the real microphone. There are 5 microphones in there. So it's primarily for broadcast applications, you can say, to increase the feeling of being at a certain atmosphere for football games or for Formula One racing or whatever it takes to make TV more interesting, TV and movies more interesting. So it's this plug and play solution, very light. And what it does is that it put out 6 analog channels, a 5.1 signal, with 5 full band channels, and then the 0.1, which is the LFE channel. So no external processing is needed, no matrix box, no nothing. Just these 6 XLR plugs out of a split cable from that unit. So it is important for me to tell a little bit about when and why to choose that one instead of the bigger surround kits. So it has to do with the setup time and the plug and play thing. That this one is intended to be quick and easy to use with and safety proof, you could say. You can nearly not do anything wrong with that one. But on the other hand, when doing a music production, as I just played back for you, I can make a better sound by optimizing my microphone choice and my microphone positioning. So it has to do with what setup time you have and what is the use of the recording. We like to call it a surround ambience adder because it mostly adds that surround component to something else, specifically in a broadcast environment. We have a lot of close mics on the side of the football team and the speaker in the center and all that. And then we have this surround sound component about some 20 to 25 dBs below everything else just to give the impression of that you are at the stadium. That's what it's there for. So it adds a surround sound atmosphere component. Basically, you can say that it benefits from 3 different perception cues. There are both level differences between the microphones and some time differences between some of them, and also some spectral differences. We have developed a certain technology that we call a DIP mic technology. That is the abbreviation of directional pressure mic. And that may be some nonsense, because of course we know that a pressure mic by nature is an omnidirectional microphone. But we've done quite a few things to make that pressure microphone directional. I'll go back to that. It has acoustic fiber baffles, sort of a jiggling disc, you could say. I don't know if you're familiar with that AB stereo principle with a certain absorbing jiggling disc in between. It's actually the same principle that we have in there between the 3 front mics, acoustic absorbing walls. We've chose to have the 3 front microphones in that unit time coincident, meaning that the left, center, and right microphones are placed on top of each other. And then we have a so-called interference tube on each of those 3 mics. An interference tube is what you usually know from a shotgun microphone, a tube that helps the microphone to become very directional. Here we have mounted that directional tube with that interference tube on a pressure microphone, meaning that it's not like a shotgun, it's not as directional as a shotgun, but it makes the Omni microphone directional. And on top of that comes the separation of the walls between the mics. Having them coincident means time coincident. Time of arrival is the same for those 3 mics. So that means that we can easily be fold-down compatible. We can easily make a fold-down mix without ruining our frequency response, because that's one of the backdrafts of the spaced arrays will be that if we have 1 meter or 2 meters between the channels and we sum that down to mono, we ruin our frequency response. So even though this organ recording sounded pretty good in a big field like this, if I summed that down to mono, I wouldn't know how my frequency response would be anymore. So this unit is backwards compatible to stereo or even to mono. So I'll just speed up a little bit here. This is a drawing that you can have the chance to see how it looks inside. It's not green, but that's one of the drawing programs that makes it green. So in here you can see, you cannot see, but you can imagine that in here is the center microphone and the capsule is in here, and then the interference tube goes out here. Out here goes the left microphone, and here goes the right microphone. And then we introduce some time distances to the left surround there and the right surround there, which are regular omni-mics without directionality tubes on. So we have some time arrival delays also. That was what I said created the best sensation of space. So it is a balance between how precise you want to be and how enveloping the sound should be, you could say. This is a directional pattern of one of the pressure omni-microphones that are in that unit. And you are hardly able to see those different colors because they are all a circle, meaning that it's a perfect omni-microphone by nature. But putting on that directional tube, we make some directionality, even if it's a pressure mic. And then putting the microphone in the unit with the separation walls makes it even more directional. So this is enough to create enough level difference between the channels to be able to be precise. I did bring an audio example also, but I was not clever enough to bring it in the right format. It was a DVD audio that I brought with me, and this one cannot play it back. But never mind, you get the chance another day to listen to that. This is a picture of the breakout cable. There's one plug that you plug in the unit, and it splits out to the 6 XLR channels. Frequency response is here, 0 degrees. You can see, of course, then the center channel is most alive. Left and right channel are following each other, and left and right surround also follows each other. So it's basically a high frequency roll off there. And if you go around the unit, you can see now we turn right about the microphone 30 degrees, and the right channel will begin to rise, almost same level as the center. If you go to 60 degrees, the right channel is the loudest, and the right surround, which is the blue line, will begin to become alive. 90 degrees into the unit, right and right surround should be almost equally loud. 120 degrees, that's directly into the right surround, which is the light blue color here. And the other two also, again, go in pairs. 150, we have a small contribution also from left surround now. And 180, left surround and right surround are equally loud. Another way to put it, it's a new way that we've experimented with how do we make these directionality curves on a round microphone. We put up the 5 polar patterns of the 5 microphones at the right point and right angle according to the microphone. A good tip in general, not only with this mobile surround microphone, but in general, is to, if you cannot go that far away with your rear microphones, maybe because you are above the audience or something else, maybe you just have this one place that you can place the microphone, then you can add some time delay to the rear channels to simulate that they are further away. It's never the same as placing the microphones at a distance, but it gives you that sensation of size. Another good idea is, especially if you have too much direct clarity of the rear channels, roll off the high frequency a little bit by a high shelving filter. So this was where I would have loved to play the organ recording of that one. It's so small that I had to make a big yellow arrow. You can hear that another day. So that's the presentation, only 10 minutes late. So any questions so far?
Ce microphone est-il compatible avec une écoute en mono malgré la différence de temps entre les capteurs?
The good advice is, since the channels are discrete, they are separate, you can choose to work with the 3 front mics, left, center and right, because those are the 3 that are time coincident. No time delays between those 3. So if you consider that as what you should use to make your fold down mix, that's the way to do it. But you can say that since the unit is so small, we do not work with these large time of arrival differences. It's not several meters or several milliseconds. The largest distance in the unit between the mics is about 18 centimeters, which is something like this, between left and right surround. And it's more or less like an ORTF distance, which is to some degree also mono compatible. So you can also put that one in, but my recommendation is if you do a fold-down mix, only use the front channels, the left, center, and right. We have not put something. We have not put any time delay in ourselves, just this distance. So the mixing tip that I just put up was something that you have to put on yourself.
A-t-on le choix du câble en configuration
yeah.
mobile?
I don't know if we did bring the cable, did you? It's a LEMO connector, an 18-pin LEMO connector, a very professional connector with a locking device. So it actually also has some water protection inside. And then we have a special manufactured Mogami cable, a 6-pair Mogami cable that they made for us to that one.
Qui utilise ce genre de microphone et comment le fixe-t-on?
One of the specifications, and the reason for that was that we had a specification for a certain American football ball or something like that, where they want to put it down from the ceiling. So it gives them the possibility to, again, to mount something with the microphone stand or device from the top. Of course, you could have turned the device the other way around and panned the channel the other way, but okay, that's what they wanted. And then one of the ideas, now we had that specification with the thread on top, is that you can also use that for mounting an extra center microphone. For instance, if you want to use this one for a documentary news program or something like that, you can have a shotgun microphone on top of that to have a very precise sound in an interview, for instance. So you can substitute the inbuilt center by placing as an external center microphone, shotgun center microphone on top of that.
Peut-on l'utiliser vraiment yeah. fixé sur une caméra?
No. And you're absolutely right. Not for the time being, though we're working on that. If you saw the picture, you saw also that the cable did not go into the camera, but ran away into an external audio recorder. Yeah. Actually, we're not using that picture anymore because it confuses some people. Because it is a discrete 6-channel output, not something to put directly into a camera.
Que pourriez-vous dire sur la sortie basse fréquence sub?
Yes, thanks. I forgot to mention that. The low frequency output is derived from a sum of left and right channel. So we put together left and right channel and do a low pass filter on that on 120 Hz. So since it is pressure microphones, that's again one of the reasons for choosing the pressure microphone, is that no matter the distance to the sound source, we have a fixed, you could say, amount of low frequency. So we don't need a specific LFE microphone to capture that. We have plenty of low frequencies to get to the LFE output. And the other reasons for choosing Omnis are that they are less sensitive to wind. Typically, you have 20 to 30 dB less wind noise on a pressure microphone. And that's why it's outdoor usable. And the pressure microphone is less sensitive to handling. Vibration noise is not there. So that's why we invented the dip mic. That's because we wanted the advantages of an Omni mic, which is low wind noise, low handling noise, true clarity, and consistent frequency response in the low end. And then worked to get that one directional. So inside the unit, there is a circuit, an electronic circuit that creates that LFE. Any more questions? Yes. How you
can comment le comparer à l'arbre des cas? Y a-t-il de grosses différences?
Yeah, there is. It's again about setup time, I'd say. This device is intended. It's in quite another price range. Firstly, you could say it's about 1/3 of the price of a large Decatree round array. So it's more to capture this surround component and to blend in with something else. For a true music recording, I'd say, of course, this one can be used, but it's not what it's intended for. I can always do a better recording by using 5 high-end microphones, and the price is higher. Of course, it should be better. And then again, as I mentioned, one of the first slides was about coincidence and spaced arrays. This does not give the same sensation of size as a real Decatree do.
Quel type de préampli pouvons-nous utiliser?
For the recording you heard, it was a Pro Tool rig that was rendered, so it was one of Digidesign's preamps. I don't recall the number. 6 years ago now. I only remember 20 minutes back. No, it was a rented system in Liverpool, Pro Tools system. And they are actually a bit noisy when you can hear. And this was played back in a DTS encoded method. So the real files, you can ask me for the real files. Grab my card up here and I'll send you the real files if you're interested. Yes?
Avez-vous développé une suspension particulière?
Extra suspension for the mobile microphone? No, not needed. It depends on what you mean by not needed. It's not needed to absorb any more shock vibration. That's, as I mentioned, one of the reasons for choosing the Omnis, that it's not sensitive to handling noise. And the microphones inside, you saw that green drawing before, the microphones are placed in a foam suspension in there. So there are actually some like this, a little bit of foam to suspend it. So in terms of making it anti-vibrational, it's not needed to have anything more. So let's try that in the studio. You can try and shake it. Any more questions?
Quel est le niveau du bruit de fond?
A little higher, some 8 dB higher. Since it's this microphone, surround microphone, is based on a miniature capsule, 4060, but a modified 4060. But the noise floor is the same, so it's just a little bit above 20 dB A-weighted noise, which is, yeah, of course, more than a larger diaphragm.
Quelle est la sensibilité?
Sensitivity is just close to 30 millivolts per Pascal. So it's actually quite good for a small capsule. And if you are familiar with the 4060, you know also that it's not a noisy mini microphone. It's actually a quite noise-free and dynamic mini microphone. And the sensitivity is a little higher than the standard 4060. It's a little more compliant diaphragm, and the directional tubes also gives a little rise to the sensitivity. So I think it's 26 or 28 millivolts. Yes? Anything else? Or should we move to the practical exercise? I think we should.
Autre culture.